Hey guys, welcome to Unpacking Design. I'm Mike LaValle.
And Tim Ung, and this is a show where we tell you about products and ideas that relate to designers all over the world. Hey guys, welcome back to Unpacking Design. I've had a topic on my mind for a very long time now, Mike. And this topic is one that I'm sure you can talk about a lot as well. So whenever designers pursue any kind of design competition or, you know, like let's say a public entity tries to entice designers to pursue a project for them, some crazy design ideas or whatever it might be, they always set out a design competition. And today I want to unpack free work. Because as designers, okay, all of these design competitions come down to a few very interesting points. The first is that a majority of these public competitions are done for a fee. So to enter as the designer,
sure,
you pay a fee. Typically, it's within the three-figure range, you know, like $100 and up. And you pay this fee just like you would for running a race.
Right.
You know? After you pay this fee, you then have to design everything for that project for free. You're right. Not doing any, like, they're not paying you to do this. They just gave you a brief that someone wrote up in a month. And then when you get this brief, you design this entire thing, you submit among thousands of other designers, and then you hope at the very end that you actually win.
Right.
And when you actually win, you win probably $5,000 to $6,000, right? For these larger competitions, they typically pay firms to enter. They'll invite you and then they'll pay you to design something.
Sure.
And then you'll win the project if you win. But other than those kinds of competitions, when you're pursuing the ones that we're used to seeing, you design everything for free and you win probably $6,000 to $20,000 depending on the type of competition.
You're just spinning these numbers like you...
Yeah, when you pursue it long enough, you start to find out like the $20,000 ones are rare. $10,000, kind of rare. $6,000 are more.
It sounds like you've entered a competition or two.
No, I've entered many, many competitions. And I've always had this weird feeling of entering because I didn't feel right paying someone to give them a well-designed proposal that takes you 3 months to produce, and then you submit this thing, and where does it go? It goes into an abyss, and only 10 finalists are selected, and then there's three top winners. So 13 out of 1,000 submissions. And the most recent one in architecture that I can mention is the Helsinki Guggenheim Museum competition.
Right.
And that one was headlined all around the world because it was a free-to-enter competition that actually never went anywhere. So everyone, I think they had over 80,000 proposals come in. 80,000 proposals for one competition where 80,000 designers and design firms submitted something for this competition. And I think they selected maybe three people to move on, something like that. But as far as I know, it hasn't moved anywhere yet. So when we think of free work, is it actually that bad to pursue? I mean, like, let's view this from the perspective of a designer. You know, you just graduated from school or you're just starting a practice.
Right.
You know, you need to get some kind of portfolio of work out there. Do you pursue these competitions to, like, get some idea-based work, something that's more boutique firm, or do you go and try and find clients until you eventually get to this point? Or do you do both simultaneously? Like, is it worth pursuing a free design competition? Or is it better to speculate and come up with your own kind of ideas? You know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, too.
There is. This is one that, like, has a sticking point for me.
I can tell that. So I think big picture, because I think you're using competitions as sort of the lens to talk about the bigger topic of free work, correct?
Right.
So I think let's start with competitions. I think one of the reasons why the competitions have always sort of really stood out to me are for, well, I guess there's two reasons. One is it gives you parameters. I feel like as a creative person, it's so difficult for me to create my own parameters on a project.
Right.
Unless I have a goal in mind, like you might with your speculative 30 by 30 projects. And it just found it was like an easy cop out in some ways to say, okay, look, you're going to give me the rules, you're going to give me the parameters, great, I don't have to think about those, they just are what they are, they exist. It's almost like if you had a real person saying, I have this much money, I have this property, make me a design for this building. Super easy. So that's always been something that I feel like appeals to people. I think the other thing that appeals to me, at least, is that it is a, if somebody is willing to go out there and say, look, I'm an organization or I'm a person and I want to put this competition out in the world, I want to offer somebody potential free publicity to showcase their work. Now, there's some problems immediately that I have with that, which is, one is, my experience so far with competitions has been the only people who ever know about half of these things are the people who are already entering. Or to put it a different way, if you're an architect designing an architectural proposal for a competition, the only people who will ever see this usually are architects or people who are interested in architecture, not potential clients. So I'm not necessarily thinking of it from the point of view of like, I'm going to get direct promotional feedback for a person who might end up being my client on another building. The only benefit I really see is that you're showcasing your work to other architects that you might want to work for, or you're using it as a portfolio piece. And I think, especially when you get out of school, it's a great, I personally think that it's a great time to do a competition or two, because you're building a portfolio, you feel like you have some more legitimacy at that point, because all the work you've done up to that point has either been as an intern at a firm or in school, which to me, unless your thesis is like super awesome, amazing, and you can kind of like hang your hat on that a little bit, most work that you're doing needs to have some ground in reality to a degree, I think, especially if you're trying to start your own thing or work for somebody, they want to know that you can bring it back down to earth a little bit. A lot of thesis projects or schoolwork doesn't fit that bill, so I think competitions are a great way to do that. To your bigger point about free work in general, though, the thing that I've learned is that I think as I've done something like 9 or 10 competitions in my life since I left school, you know, I haven't won, I won one of them, and or as a finalist in a design build competition, but I felt like because of the super large pools for most of the competitions that I was in, that not that I didn't have a chance, but that I didn't, I was entering them not trying to win. Like, my mentality for these competitions was never to win. It was to do the work for myself. I feel like if you're doing it for that purpose, it's different, and it's not necessarily, in my mind, I don't care whether or not I am doing the free, it's not free work to me if you have the right mentality.
Right.
But if you're just doing it for free, and you're being, if, like, if you feel like you come away from these experiences exploited a little bit, then I could see where that spin becomes negative.
Yeah.
I guess what it comes down to me is, like, what is your reasoning for doing some of this stuff? And, like, what are you trying to get out of it? Like, I feel like there's more benefit as I go, as time passes, to do more speculative projects where I design the parameters myself.
Yeah.
And I am in control of those parameters. And I, you know, we were talking a couple weeks ago that I was thinking about designing more residential work this summer, just for myself, just to kind of, like, I don't have in my portfolio very specific types of house types, but I really like to investigate more. And maybe this summer I'll do it as a just like a personal project. But like, if I know what those parameters are that I'm setting for myself, and I just create them on the onset, and then just they become things I cannot change,
right?
That becomes more important to me, because as a designer, even if it's not a real project, it's real enough to me that I'm able to, I'm working for myself for free, but in a positive way. I feel like sometimes, not whether or not they're trying to be, some of these arenas, whether it's a competition or even like sometimes you'll get RFPs or requests for proposals from people, large organizations, and they know at the end of the day when they send you that RFP that you are not going to be their architect or their designer or the person who's going to win, but they need to send it out to enough people so that it like veils the fact that you are actually going to be not the person, but they know who the person who's going to be that's going to work for them. That's a little crappy. that's a little bit, that's where I get a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to go down that route, but no, like, I get, you know, sometimes I think when we do the free work, if we have enough positive momentum behind it, and at the end of the day, we're at least still getting something out of it. It's different than if you are being, I guess, swindled.
Yeah. I think for me, the route I wanted to go with this discussion is actually down a different one where it's this idea that designers are so eager to design, which is great, right? Like, it's great that we all want to sit down and then just design something on our computers and share it with the world. Like, we don't care if it's free or not.
Right.
That's kind of the point of this discussion, that we're so eager to do it that we'll do it for free. And because of that mentality, the direction I want to go down is this path where designers also try and do free work for potential clients because they think that it'll lead to a project.
Right.
And it's this idea that every young designer, whether you're starting a practice or you're just people hear that you're a designer, they ask you if you could do this for them. And you're like, okay, you know what, I can do it. And then they say, well, you know, let's do it this way. Why don't you design it first? And then when I see it, then I'll decide, you know, how much I'll pay you then. Or if the project goes forward, then I'll hire you as the designer and then I'll give it to you. In reality, what that means is I don't really care about you as a designer. I just want your work so that I can try and do this thing.
Right.
And it happens so often in our field where people say, hey, can you design this for me? Can you design a house for me? Or can you give me the floor plans for this or for that? And then you say, oh, sure, I could do that. And we never feel confident enough to talk about prices.
Right.
Whereas other professions have that covered. You go to a doctor's office, you know you're paying money, right? You go to a lawyer's office, you know you're going to pay something eventually. And for us, it's the opposite. We have this mentality of whatever design opportunities we have now, it's always going to help our career. I see people even in their 40s still doing that too. And like, you're so far along in your experience that you shouldn't be doing work for free. And then it proliferates in the profession because everyone who starts an architecture firm seems to be afraid of negotiating. There are a handful of architects, maybe 10% out of the 100%, who are not afraid of negotiating from the onset and setting terms in a contract that has payment terminology, you know, for them to get paid on time or else work will stop. I think it's actually beneficial for designers to start taking that stance early on in their career. And I like this idea of pursuing speculative projects that we come up with, because it's great that we can pursue a competition, but what if we can design a project around an idea that we have that can apply more to our kind of firm that a design competition just can't? You know, I like this that you brought up this idea of free publicity, though, because that's the one thing that I think every designer thinks about.
Right.
Well, if I pursue this competition and I win, I'm going to get publicized. And your point about who's seeing that is a good one. Who is seeing it on a competition website? Because the only reason why we know about it is because our friends told us about this website.
Yeah.
We all go there. They release the final results. Where does it go? Does it go to a homeowner association if you're designing a house for a competition? Does it go to a building association?
Yeah, and like who you tell also influences it too. Like if you tell your mom, like, oh, I won a competition. Great. Like, I'm so proud of you. Like,
right.
But it's not the same as, you know, that the average person, especially for a design competition, isn't looking. It's a very, in some ways, insular situation where, like, unless you're looking at Design Milk or Architizer or insert popular design blog here, like you're not going to be following it. And even if you do follow those things, yeah. there's so much stuff now in the world that like it might not even be newsworthy to you, or right. you might miss it.
Yeah.
So I think that especially today, it becomes a question more of what kind of importance are you putting on the work itself versus the result that it will give you after you've done it.
Yeah.
So like if you're doing the work because, you know, even if you're in a situation where the client says, I'd really love you to, or love it if you would design something for me. And, you know, then I'll decide how much, or we'll talk about how much you make after that. You know, even if you were to simply negotiate the fact that like whatever you produce as a design, you can keep after, you know, mm-hmm. as a way to showcase what you've done, mm-hmm. that might be as simple enough. Maybe you're not getting a monetary exchange, but mm-hmm. you're getting an exchange in some kind of value back.
Yeah.
So that at least the work can become part of your portfolio.
Yeah.
Like even if it, a lot of times because there's no contracts and there's no sort of exchange of something or other, whether that's money or otherwise, it becomes a very muddy situation where you don't even know if you can share the stuff that you've done.
Right.
And that becomes dangerous because then if, like, let's say you do share it and you weren't supposed to, and then, like, having something in place, whether it's a formal contract or even just like a, you know, it's, even if it's just like a, this sounds silly, but like somebody signed something on a napkin kind of thing, you mm-hmm. know, like a very simple, like we agree, or an email where mm-hmm. yes, we will figure something out, or we will pay mm-hmm. you for this or something like that.
Yeah.
Something that's just very, it doesn't have to be ironclad, but an understanding formally that you are a person providing some kind of value to someone else, whether that's a creative framework or an actual literal deliverable design, mm-hmm. and you are providing that service and you should get something back. You know, I was just, as you brought this topic up, because I didn't know this was gonna be your topic as usual, but I was just starting to look up, because I was trying to remember this quote that, and I didn't find it, but I found something that was sort of just as good, and it's by anonymous, but basically if you're either work for free or work for, you know, what you're worth, but never work for cheap.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also a valuable spin on this, because you could completely undersell what you're valued at, mm-hmm. and that's almost worse than not getting paid, because
yeah.
at least if you're not getting paid for something, there's this understanding that you're volunteering or sort of dedicating your time or services to something or a cause or a person or a thing mm-hmm. of your own free will.
Yeah.
Versus getting paid for cheap, which could be like a percentage of what you're normally valued at, mm-hmm. which almost feels worse. it feels worse because you know you're like shortchanging yourself, but you're also not taking that much of a stance on what you're valued at.
Yeah.
And in some ways I feel like that becomes, I don't know, it's just an interesting kind of variation on what you brought up, because I don't know what's better. But I almost feel like I would rather knowingly work for free
yeah.
from the get-go, whether it's a competition mm-hmm. or it's, you know, there is some risk in answering a request for proposal mm-hmm. as a designer. You know,
yeah.
you know that you are competing against other firms or other entities, mm-hmm. but there's something that's, I don't know, invigorating about that. Like you can prevail somehow mm-hmm. and then get the job
yeah.
versus, you know, just pay me whatever, you know, just
yeah.
put it in the tip jar.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, going back to something you were talking about earlier about finding a design competition that relates to some ideas that you already have about your profession or within your profession and then pursuing it because it's related.
Right.
I think that's a really good way of putting it, because that's something that I'm doing now. Like, I'm focusing so much time around this idea of public housing and low-cost housing that whenever I see a competition related to this, I think about pursuing it. But now I actually think about competitions from a totally different perspective and free work from a totally different perspective. So to me now, I see free work and competitions as a way of guiding me because of exactly what you said. They give you parameters to work from. But also, when I think about free work, I think about speculative work, like what I'm doing with Journey of an Architect. And then when I think about competitions, I now think about it from the perspective of taking a speculative project that I've already developed and maybe slightly modifying it to fit a competition and then submitting it. And if I win, I win. Sure. Yeah, if I don't, it was its own project anyway. Like, yeah, so it didn't really need to be. Yeah. Now I just submitted this for a cost that could potentially, you know, could bring in some profit. But at the same time, it's more for publicity. So why not instead take this speculative project and find popular blogs that you really like to follow? And then you take this design project that you've developed and finalized and then submit it to that blog. So this is kind of where I'm heading with in terms of this whole discussion of free work. I think free work is great if you're doing it as a speculative project for your firm or for yourself. And then you can take that speculative project and potentially reach out to these popular blogs and get it on their platform, so then gain publicity for you and to start building this brand. Right. That's kind of a direction that I'm moving in now. There's a competition that I just saw for an affordable housing design in France that I'll probably be pursuing.
Ooh.
And if I pursue that particular one, I'm not going to pursue it with just the idea that I'm submitting so that my submission goes to them and can't be used elsewhere. I'm going to design a proposal around that competition, but design it from my own perspective. And then when I submit it, I'll also be able to submit it as my own work too. So I'm trying to develop more ways of taking this idea of a free design project and turn it into more marketing materials for myself to start building a brand. So I'm also going back in time now to my 30 speculative projects, however many are related to architecture, taking those architecture projects and refining them and developing the graphics to a greater extent so that I can then share it with, you know, popular blogs. Like for us, it would be like Architizer, ArcDaily, you know, like these kinds of big names. And then if they publish it on their website, it also brings in free publicity to the blog and to what I'm doing and to my vision. So now it's not just free work, it's actually helping those blogs, but it's helping me brand myself. So right. Now I'm getting more out of this one little thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I think that doing a lot of this stuff is still valuable. And one of the things that I've always kept as a mantra before I even enter a competition is, what am I learning? Or like, if I don't win, and I usually go into the mentality not as trying to win the competition, but what is my goal for this endeavor?
Right.
So I either need to do one of two things. I either need to learn about a new kind of software,
mm-hmm.
Or I need to learn about the topic or the theme that competition is about. So mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you a really good example. I entered a chair competition in like 2010, and it was about sustainability and making a low-cost, affordable chair for using only really sustainable materials and mm-hmm. things like that. It not only taught me more about furniture design and chair design, but it also taught me about sort of really, like things were like water jet cut and mm-hmm. laser cut, and like there was all these like different fabrication techniques that I learned about in the same vein.
Right.
And I've been thinking about those things ever since I did that competition in my normal work, whether or not they're applicable. And every design builds upon that one experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not experience that I would naturally gain from working at an employer
mm-hmm.
unless I was looking for it. So yeah. I looked for it in the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So the free work benefited me in the long term because it opened my eyes to things I was kind of interested in peripherally
mm-hmm.
and gave me a project to focus on so that I could really experiment with it, mm-hmm. to use it as like a testing bed.
Yeah.
So if you can get something out of it, I guess it just depends on like what is valuable to you.
Yeah.
Like what is valuable to you? When we say free work, there's inherently the first thing that comes to my mind is money. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a question of, well, why aren't you getting paid? Why aren't you getting something in exchange for this service? And I think that as long as you, as a designer, don't feel like you are getting swindled and you are gaining something out of it, you know, knowledge really, I've always believed that knowledge really is power.
Yeah.
And learning more and understanding more from the process, and not learning more like, oh, I got screwed over, mm-hmm. so now I learned from that and I won't get screwed over again, but more that I'm going to take the experience of the actual design process here and then apply that further into my process as a designer is in some ways more beneficial than if I got paid with mm-hmm. money in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. I think this idea of value, like what is this free work going to bring you aside from the money, the potential of winning money? It's a really good way of framing it, because you can think about it from so many different perspectives, you know, from publicity to marketing to actually having gained knowledge in an area that you would have never thought about. Sometimes you learn that through a brief, but then you actually have to practice it and to try it out in that competition or in that proposal. So I think that's probably the biggest value from doing free work, that you're getting something outside of money from it. And if you can't find anything else beyond money, then maybe it's not worth pursuing because it's the wrong reasons.
Right.
And at that point, is it really free work, or is it more just you trying to gain something for yourself? Like you're still pursuing a competition or a potential project, but you're doing it because you're building a portfolio piece. So it's something you would have done anyway.
Yep.
I think that's how I'm starting to view all of this, that no matter what it is that I decide to pursue, it has to help me build my portfolio in a small way, and it also has to help me build my own personal brand.
Yep.
So
one place, you hinted on this a little bit, I want to make this into like a little bit of a mini rant diversion from here, but you brought up friends and family and just people who aren't in the profession kind of as asking for, so like there's a difference in my mind between an organization asking for you to do work for free mm-hmm. and people that you just happen to know that aren't in the profession or aren't designers or aren't creatives.
Right.
They just want something for free.
Yeah.
So we're going to go into a little bit of a mini rant mode, mm-hmm. but I feel like the quote that I was looking for, something to paraphrase, is like, you know, you're not paying for the deliverable, you're paying for my experience, you're paying for mm-hmm. my professionalism, you're paying for the years that it took me to, I know what it was. It was the story about Picasso and the sketch that he had. And he sketched on like a napkin or a doodle in a restaurant, mm-hmm. and somebody wanted it, and I can't remember what he charged them for, or he asked for, but mm-hmm. it was like, you know, I want, let's just say it was $1 million. It probably mm-hmm. wasn't, but let's just say it was. And the person looked back at them and said, well, you just doodled that. I mean, why would it cost that much? He's mm-hmm. like, well, you're not paying for the doodle, you're paying for the experience it took me to get to that thing.
Right.
And I'd always thought that like, as a, whether that's the actual story or it's just something mm-hmm. that I've like evolved in my mind, but the lesson from that is that the experience is really what you're paying for. The mm-hmm. the professionalism is what you're paying for.
Yeah.
So like if you go into a doctor's office and that doctor has worked for, you know, whatever, however many years it took them to get to be a doctor, mm-hmm. and then it took, you know, another whatever years to get to the expertise that they're at, mm-hmm. that's what you're paying for. You might not only, now, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of the medical community and like all the, how much it actually costs and whatever, but the lesson of that person has gone through the motions and gone through the steps to get to that level, mm-hmm. you're paying for that person's response at that moment in their life with that level of expertise.
Yeah.
You're not paying for the little, you know, one-liner they're going to give you or the prescription that they're going to mm-hmm. give you. They're prescribing something because maybe it works or whatever.
Yeah.
Their evaluation is coming from the experience. Mm-hmm. The same thing with a lawyer. You're getting that experience of somebody who has read and understood the law mm-hmm. and can then interpret it for you and then help you through mm-hmm. your situation.
Yeah.
Same thing with an architect. You're asking for that person's professional opinion and design expertise to give you something that you wouldn't have been able to achieve otherwise mm-hmm. in the built environment.
Yeah.
And it's not just the quote unquote noble professions. It's somebody, if you're designing a website, I'm going to go to somebody who has designed a bunch of websites mm-hmm. because they've done it over, they have the repetitions and they have the experience mm-hmm. of doing that. If they've designed logos, they've designed publications, if they've designed mm-hmm. whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're going to go to that person because they know what they're doing. They're passionate about that thing.
Right.
And they've put in the work to learn about that thing. It just, I wouldn't go into, like, I'm not good with cars, mm-hmm. as an example. Like, I'm horrendous with cars. If I went to a mechanics shop, I wouldn't just start presuming, oh, well, you have no idea what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, I would go to them because they are the person who fixes cars day in, day out, and can help me make my car run properly. Like, this doesn't apply to just designers. This applies to people who have a trade or a skill or something. Mm-hmm. And it just always felt very odd to me that we were always so presumptuous about, like, what people could offer. Like, mm-hmm. that mechanic shouldn't have to just, you know, do whatever I want them to do for, like, mm-hmm. free, you yeah. know? Like, they have to make a living. They have to, like, the whole machine has to kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That's my little mini rant. But no, I'm just,
it,
like...
it makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad you touched on it, because that is something that the design professions are missing. The fact that people see us develop something digitally and then they just think that the computer did it for us through an algorithm that Google developed. You know, Google did not develop an algorithm to design a project for you just yet.
Right.
Like, it takes some knowledge behind this thing to in order for us to design something for you that's for you. And that's something that we missed out on, because a lot of us as designers, we seem to talk to our clients as though they're God. You know, like, when you talk to them, it's like everything that they say is right, and we're afraid of speaking back or speaking up and to correct something. And that's something that I've been working very hard not to do. Like, it's something that now, if someone's talking to me and they assume that something's going to take me 3 hours when in reality it should take a week to do,
yeah.
I let them know it's actually going to take a week because of such and such reason. And as you start to get to this point with certain people, there are some clients who understand and others who will never understand. And the people who will never understand, I don't know why it is for them and that they will never come to agree, but there are people who I know will never accept that something takes longer than we say.
Sure.
Or they see us do something and they just assume, well, it's just a few lines on a piece of paper, right? And those few lines, people don't realize, have more value to them than just having a child draw it for them. You know, like, those lines have more thought in them than anyone else can ever see.
Yeah, I mean, a really great example would be if you look at any of the, you know, Pritzker Prize winning architects, most of their sketches are like, a lot of them are like doodles.
Right.
They look like anybody could have drawn them, but the care and the thought into a lot of those sketches and that process,
mm-hmm.
you know, these are the masters of amongst the profession,
right?
You know, but if you just gave the one sketch to somebody who's never seen an mm-hmm. architect work before, they might laugh at it, or they mm-hmm. might think that it's crazy. Like, why would this person be such a genius or such a vanguard or such a person who's like masterful at their craft?
Right.
But that sketch is one of a million sketches.
Yeah.
You know,
and the one point I want to close this episode on, and it's related to that idea of the sketches, is that even the most famous and prolific designers that we know of today, from Massimo Vignelli to BRK Ingels, you know, it's all these people have had times in their careers where they did work for free.
Sure.
Like, BRK had to hire someone who was not an architect, who is now the CEO, and she does a fantastic job at getting money, at getting them what they're valued for. But before her, there were a lot of outstanding invoices that were never paid. So it's the same, and even for the people that we admire today, they started at a point where they weren't getting paid for their work too.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to distinguish why you're doing and pursuing these free opportunities. Like, there has to be something in it for you. Perhaps it's a really, really big project that will be built. And it's, if it were a big project, you would not want to do it for free.
Yeah.
The liability you're taking on, all of these things, like, there is cost associated with it. So ultimately, I think pursuing free work is not bad. I think you have to pursue it with the right mentality.
Yep.
You don't want to overdo it either. You don't want to spend 5 years designing something for free. You know, like, you want to do it in spurts, and you want to make sure that they're aligned with your vision for what you want your future as a designer to be.
Sure. And I think the other thing that we didn't really mention at all, but a lot of times when you're billing, let's say you have big projects, you have two or three big projects, and then you have one little one that comes around that's free.
Yeah.
You know, the overhead and the fee that you're getting theoretically from the other bigger projects should mm-hmm. float you through the times that you are doing something for free.
Right.
So, like, if you're on your own and you're doing, you know, maybe one free project a year or every other year or whatever, you can still build that pacing in, I think. But
yeah.
it's more of, that's why, like, a lot of firms do competitions in general. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of the mid-sized, bigger firms will do competitions anyway
mm-hmm.
because they can, you know, maybe either pay the staff to do them or enter something. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because bigger picture on the books is that it's fine that they do that. It's like
right.
R&D for that firm. If you treat it like research and development, though, I think that's a good way to think about it. Is like, if you're going to do the work, have that mission, have that purpose, have that reason to do it,
mm-hmm.
and then just try to make sure that all the pieces kind of work for you. If you can afford to, you know, do those for free,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's worth it.
Right. All right, guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Hey, guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. And you can check us out anytime at the unpackingdesign.com website.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.